Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin.
Listen with Other, because grown-ups need story time too. The Mind Children by Giles Booth. These are videotapes. They're huge. Is this what you boomers used to use? Gen X, thank you very much. No, these aren't home videos. These aren't your VHSs or your Betamaxes. These are U-matics. Have you got something to wipe the dust off? Just use the bedding. This room's trashed now anyway. Review copy. Not for sale or distribution. Property of HTV Limited, Bath Road, Bristol. The Mind Children. Episode 4, The Death of the Author. Open it up. Cassette looks okay. We'll have to try and find someone with a U-matic machine to play this on. This is incredible. What does it say on the other two boxes? I think they might be empty. Open them up. No, no tapes. Just papers. Let's see. Steady on. Sorry, got a bit overexcited. That's okay, I'm excited too. Nervous. What are these? Oh my God. It's a manuscript, typed, The Mind Children, Book 2. This must be the second book. It must have episodes 4, 5 and 6. Yeah, it does. It looks like three stories. First one is called Death of the Author. I wonder if this predicts his murder. There's only one way to find out. What's in the other box? An envelope. To whom it may concern. Well... Well, what? You're going to open it? Oh, well. What's it say? I think it's in code. It's just a jumble of random letters. Welcome back to episode 4 of Tea Time TV Retro Machine. Been meaning to ask you, Dave.
Yes?
Why isn't our podcast called Tea Time TV Time Machine? Wouldn't that make more sense?
Because there's already a podcast called that.
Oh, right. Anyway, what's lined up on the show this week, Dave? Amazing news from my trip to Somerset. We have a videotape and more.
Woo!
That's right. We've got what seems to be a U-matic videotape review copy of episode 4 of The Mind Children. It's called The Death of the Author.
Wow.
We've not managed to play it yet. I've been in contact with a few people, but no luck so far. One guy didn't want us putting a tape that's been in a loft for over 40 years in his precious machine, in case it mangled up the mechanism.
Oh, no.
I've been quoted silly money from a specialist firm in Germany to transfer it. No way I can afford it, unless we start a crowdfunder. Might come to that, Bob. But in the meantime, dear listeners, if you or anyone you know has a late 70s or early 80s U-matic videotape machine that might play this tape, please get in touch with the pod via the socials. You said there's more. There is. There are two more things. Two more things. Two more things. We have a typescript of the unpublished second Mind Children TV tie-in book.
Whoa! three more stories covering what would have been episodes 4, 5 and 6. Have you read them? Well, here's the thing. I've only read the first one, which would be episode 4. I'm going to ration them, just reading them one at a time for each episode of the pod. And I suggest you do the same, Bob. So we're going on a journey with the listeners. I guess we are. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin. Susan Grey had grown to dread Christmas. Once, it had been a magical time of year, filled with an indescribable sense of excitement she only realised had ever existed now that it was gone. It wasn't just not believing in Father Christmas. There was something else missing. She supposed this was what growing up was like. She dreaded the school Christmas fair in particular, although this being her final year at primary school, at least it would be her last. Her father, Jonathan, worked as a salesman for a computer company. Once, it had been a novelty. She was proud of her dad, setting up the mini computer in the school hall where he charged 5 pence a go for printing out customised stories. You typed in your name, whether you were a boy or a girl, and the names of 2 friends, and a huge, loud machine printed out a customised adventure story. There were random elements, so even if you used the same names every year, you got a different story. Some were set in forests with wizards and dragons. Some were set in old-fashioned boarding schools. Another story was set in space. You never knew what you were going to get, but they always had a happy ending. But now, some of Susan's classmates had computers at home. Microcomputers, her dad called them, saying the word with contempt. He said they were making the machines he sold obsolete. Sometimes, he said, they were making him obsolete as well. The school hall was getting busy with busybodies busying themselves. Stalls were being set up, the stage was being cleared for the choir to sing carols. The scent of mulled wine started to mask the usual smell of sweaty socks and stale mashed potato. In the far corner by the serving hatch, Jonathan Grey was setting up his mini computer. 3 large filing cabinet-sized boxes, a VDU and a line printer. The ABC 1723 was on its last legs, but he was fond of the machine, a reliable old workhorse, albeit one soon to be put out to pasture, or worse. He wasn't even sure if Amalgamated British Computers would still be a going concern by next Christmas, but either way, with Susan leaving primary school next year, it would probably be his last school fair, though of course he'd offer to come back. He looked round for Susan and spotted her with her friend Joanne. He tried to call out to her, but she ignored him and ran off with her friend. Joanne's mum, minding the mulled wine, was watching him. She wandered over. "They grow up so fast," she said. "Yes, yes they do," he said, his eyes not moving from the VDU as he typed some commands in. She silently passed him a paper cup of mulled wine and he sipped it. He could see in the glass a reflection of her almost putting her hand on his shoulder, thinking better of it and moving away. He looked up at the huge mural which dominated the school hall. Painted in the style of a classic railway poster, it showed people dancing round the maypole on the village green. You could see St. Botolph's Church, the school, the 7 Magpies pub, and Compton Clumps, the trees on the hill that overlook Compton Magna, like a watchful but kind parent. They said each person dancing round the maypole was based on a real villager when it was painted in the 1950s. Today, something seemed to be different about it, but he could not put his finger on it at all. Whoa, that was not what I was expecting. Me neither. Very odd again for a kids' TV show. Hint here that Susan's dad and Joanne's mum might be about to have an affair? Yeah, that's how I read it. Remember, Joanne's dad's on the road for long periods of time, so there's a suggestion that he's playing away as well. What do you make of it all? Got to be honest, I was a bit disappointed. Why? Don't get me wrong, it's great to have another story, and remember this one and the two that follow were never transmitted, so no one has ever heard these plots before. But I thought it would give us a clue about why Damon Allen was killed in real life. You mean he predicts his own death in this story? Yeah, when I saw the title, Death of the Author, I thought that's what it meant. He'd have written a murder mystery that would point to the people who would in fact go on to kill him in real life. Not something about a computer writing stories. So he's referencing Roland Barthes in a kids' TV show.
Who?
French dude, late 60s. He said that the reader's interpretation of a text is more important than the author's intention. Hence, death of the author. How do you know all this stuff, Bob?
I know. Went to university. I carried on reading books. You should try it, Dave.
Sounds like hard work. Like anything, you just need to practice. Well, I did finish reading this story. Where do the Moyne children fit in? Stay tuned, Bob. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsor.
You've heard of crypto. You may have heard of quantum, but never at the same time. You have now. Flange is about to launch the world's first quantum crypto meme coin. Get in on the ground floor at flangequantumcrypto.biz today. Flange is not regulated by the Financial Services Authority. Your investment may be at risk of market fluctuations and bad vibes. Terms and conditions apply.
The Moyne children stood outside the school hall, looking in through the windows at the children and parents milling around the stalls selling gifts and food. The glass was starting to steam up, but they could still clearly sense what was happening inside. Joanne's mother had been very successful with her mulled wine store. Luke addressed the other Moyne children without speaking out loud. "What are we doing here?"
"Observing," replied Matthew.
"Indeed," interjected Mark. "I see there is much to learn about the adult humans. Note the stupefying effect the alcohol has on them. They are losing their inhibitions. It will make their minds more malleable."
"We should carry out a little experiment," said Matthew.
"What do you have in mind?" asked Mark.
"The adult named Jonathan Gray with his laughably primitive computer. I think we should see if we can persuade him to reprogram it."
The Moyne children began nodding in unison, their eyes flashing blue and green. So far, it had not been a successful fair for Susan's dad. He'd only had three customers. The novelty of computers seemed to be wearing off. He'd been feeling dizzy and kept nodding off. Too much stuffy air and mulled wine on an empty stomach, he supposed.
"Excuse me, mister."
Jonathan Gray woke with a start. He must have dozed off again.
"Can I have a story?"
He looked up at a sickly-looking boy with ginger hair. He appeared to be on his own.
"Where's your mummy or daddy?"
"I don't know."
"What's your name?"
"Andrew."
"Well, Andrew, we better find your parents."
"I want a story."
"Have you got 5p?
"No, I don't have any money. Stevie took it."
"Oh dear. Look, you can have this story on me. I just need a few details. Your name is Andrew. Let's type that in. And you're a boy. Type that in the machine as well. That's so the story can say he and his instead of she and hers. Now, I just need the names of two friends to put in to make your story."
"I don't have any friends."
"You must have some friends, Andrew. Who do you play with?"
"No one. Stevie sometimes. He's a big boy, though."
"No one else?"
"Stevie's friend Mike. I like Mike. He looks out for me."
"Well, let's put in Stevie and Mike. I'll type them in for you. There we go. And then I'll type print." The huge line printer sprang to life, the printhead banging out characters on the green lined paper. Once upon a time, there was a boy called Andrew. Andrew was the bravest boy in the world, and with his friends Stevie and Mike, they set about solving a mystery. A mystery about why Andrew was always feeling so ill, so very ill, that he often missed school. Jonathan Gray stared at the line printer. He didn't recognise this storyline. He programmed fantasy adventures about princesses and dragons ripping yarns about boarding schools and space exploration, but nothing like this. The story went on. Stevie and Mike decided to spy on Andrew's parents, and one day they saw that Andrew's mummy was putting extra salt in his food. Far too much salt. And then she was forcing him to eat the food even when he said he hated it. She told him if he loved her, he would eat the food, and if he did not eat the food, she would go away and Andrew would be all alone forever. Andrew did not want to be all alone forever. Jonathan ripped the paper off the printer. He couldn't believe his eyes. Just then, the headmistress appeared, followed by her timid deputy.
Mr. Gray, I want that machine off, and I want it off now.
Yes, headmistress, we've had complaints. Highly inappropriate stories, making libelous insinuations about parents and teachers in the school. Whatever were you thinking?
I don't know. Some fault in the machine.
Susan was mortified. She didn't know what to do. She ran away. Out of the school, she ran and ran down towards the river. Losing her footing on a wet, grassy slope, she rolled over and over and found herself looking up at Compton Clumps on the top of the round hill. She burst into tears. That evening, Susan's dad unloaded the computer from the back of his van and he put the huge, heavy units back in his garage. It had taken hours to find Susan, who was now in bed with a hot water bottle. He was banned from the school premises and his wife wasn't speaking to him. He still had no idea how the programme had been altered. Without thinking, he picked up the sledgehammer that rested on the floor in the corner of the garage. And he started smashing the computer to pieces. He went at it with increasing force until there was nothing left of it but a pile of twisted metal and electronic circuits, its core memory and wires spilling over the floor like the guts of an animal.
Bloody hell, Dave.
Bloody hell indeed, Bob.
Lot to unpack there.
You're telling me, Bob.
I'm really wondering now, if the ITV strike hadn't interrupted it, whether the series would have been pulled anyway.
Or pulled even if Damon Allen hadn't been murdered.
You really think he was?
It's a distinct possibility.
You said there were two other things aside from the videotape we can't play. The manuscript we've just been hearing extracts from, and there's something else?
Yes, there's a letter.
What does it say?
We don't know. Here, have a look.
It's in code. I bet this is a Caesar cipher.
You always used to be good at codes when we were kids.
Yeah, me and Terry. We had our own code. Nobody ever broke it.
Anyway, I've got a computer program here that'll do a brute force attack on a Caesar cipher. I'll just type in the first line. LUDQCMSYFQGA.
A Caesar what?
Caesar cipher. It just shifts the alphabet along by a certain number of letters. We don't know the key, so this program tries all 26 keys. Well, 25 really. If you shift it by 26 letters, you end up with the plain text again, so that's not much of a code, is it?
I have no idea what you're doing.
Leave it to the experts, Dave. Anyway, yes?
Oh, nothing.
Oh, it's all gibberish.
Not a Caesar cipher, then?
No, I think something harder. We'll put it in the show notes. We'll see if a listener can crack it. We need a key, or a clue to the key.
Maybe it's in the next story.
What's it called?
The Short-Trousered Racketeer.
That bit about that boy Andrew, does it remind you of...
Yeah, I know.
Do you think...
I don't want to think about it, Bob. I think we should leave that one well alone.
That was part 4 of The Mind Children, written, read and mixed by Giles Booth, with original music by Lee Sperry. If you're enjoying the story, why not let me know by adding reviews on Apple Podcasts or dropping a line to blog my wiki on Blue Sky or Mastodon. Join me next time when The Mind Children unexpectedly take the side of a school bully. Listen With Other is a GSB Radio Enterprises production.